Shut up and sit down.
We cyclists are a funny old breed.
We are. What type of rider are you?
I'm just a regular bloke with a regular bike. I'm your average dad who enjoys a nice ride. I wear lycra and fluoro when I'm riding at night. I piss everybody off and ignore the red lights. My life, my rights, don't you know who we are? Cable ties on my helmet and I pretend I'm a car.
Hello, my faithful listeners. You are listening to the Dialed Podcast with Matt Legrand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. You can now listen to the guys ramble on about riding bikes and possibly some triathlon mumbo jumbo, or you can just keep hitting the 15-second rewind button and hang out with me. After all, we know that's why you came here.
Your legs, your legs, your legs, your legs. I ride really slow in the middle of the lane while drivers behind me are going.
That sounds about right.
I'm a cyclist. He's a cyclist.
Mark Twain gives this sound advice. Learn to ride a bicycle. You'll not regret it if you live. Hold on. What did he actually mean there?
Hi, and welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I'm Jake Von Deringen. I'm here with Matt Legrand.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? You guys are looking pretty reasonable.
Yeah, to his right, not Lance Hepler, but Evan Price.
You know, we were going to do a new intro thing here. Now I'm thrown for a loop. I have to go back to my normal.
Go back to your old. Go back
so
your
what
old.
Are we all drinking here today?
What are you sipping on?
Matt's sipping out of a plastic green cup.
Plastic green cup. You don't know what's in this cup. It could be anything.
Green and
what's
yellow.
What's in Matt's cup?
It's like one of those thermal cups that
it is,
changes
yeah.
color with heat.
That is cool. I didn't even notice that.
Actually, very cool.
It is decaf coffee from Dialed Cycling Lab.
But more importantly, the cup
sponsored
is
by
Mana?
Something you get at Costco, I think.
Cool. I am having a healthy energy drink today. I'm joking. It's not
ghost
healthy. It's
energy.
Ghost energy. This is at the
Tropical
gas station right
mango.
Next to us. So, you know, if Ghost wants to sponsor this podcast, I've actually watched some of their YouTube videos. They have a very popular YouTube channel,
do
Ghost.
They really? Mm-hmm. Is they it do. Like kids doing skateboarding tricks?
It's like kids playing video games and stuff. I think it's their niche. So, you know, that's definitely my crowd. That's
you're
the
in.
Crowd I relate most to is 13-year-olds playing video games.
I do feel like we need to reach out for some sponsors for you and Ghost Energy Drink.
That'd be awesome.
A triathlete?
Oh,
like
yeah.
Pro
be like,
triathlete,
you guys have a bunch of pro gamers. Why not have somebody that doesn't
right
sit on their couch and play video
Let me
games?
Ask you a hard question.
Oh, yes, go.
What's the bottom line on the price it would take for you to be a Ghost Energy Drink sponsored
Oh,
athlete?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'll put down an actual
say case.
Number.
No, case,
I'll put...
Case of Ghost?
I'll put down a true number. It would need to be between $8,000 and $12,000 for the year.
For the year.
Yep.
Come on, Ghost. Come on, Ghost.
Ghost has big money now, too. They're in, like, the supplement industry now, too.
Huh. Oh, I don't think you want to be peddling that stuff.
But who I really want to sponsor me is Red Bull. So let's gear that back towards
Red
Bull. Come on, Red Bull. Get some of that Red Bull money.
Don't tell Ghost that. They don't want to hear this Red Bull talk.
Never mind. Ghost, no, you're the one.
I will
sell out to anybody. Okay.
Good.
Where do you guys think Lance is right now?
I have him on LoJack.
Do you?
Yeah.
LoJack him.
I'm going to guess.
What is LoJack?
Find my
okay. So LoJack. Okay, so LoJack was this thing that people used on cars to find, like, you would like put this thing on your car back in the day,
tracking device. Yeah,
yeah.
But I just use that as an old reference that no one gets anymore.
Yeah,
about
I got you
being able to track. Yeah, you caught it.
I got you.
Yep. You got it.
A mile over my head.
Millennials.
So now I use Find My. Well, it makes sense that most people. I'm gonna guess before I look that he's just in Eastern Oregon. That's my guess.
Eastern Oregon. Rock hounding or riding his mountain bike?
Oh, rock hounding definitely. Or both.
I'll go mountain biking. If you say rock hunting, I'll go mountain biking.
Technically, if he's mountain biking, he's looking for rocks too simultaneously.
Yeah, that's true.
That's
yeah.
true.
This
Good
is true.
Point.
Yeah, Lance is off the grid today. He is heading somewhere. I think he's going down to Moab, if I'm not mistaken, and he's going to spend some time down there and then might, I don't know, meander around for a bit. So I don't think we're going to see him for about a month.
I think he's also, his daughter has something really cool coming up. I know, like, film industry wise, that he was
needing
to be down
film
there for.
Or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, something
right.
like that.
Film industry.
Yep.
Yeah. What an amazing family.
Yeah, so they've got that going on, and I know he's going to Sun Valley. He's got a bunch of things going on, so we probably won't see Lance until like late July, but he'll be calling, and I think he'll be back on next week with our.
He's in. I was off. Does anyone else want to guess?
I'm
gonna say Nevada. He's somewhere random in Nevada.
Good guess.
Yeah. No, I'm going to say Utah.
Utah, okay. Yeah. Where's he at?
Ridgefield, Utah. Ridgefield, something like that. Ridgefield, Utah.
Probably middle of nowhere, Utah. Sorry for all of our listeners.
He got low-jacked. Wait, is he on?
We're trending in Ridgefield.
Oh, he's on the 70 driving south.
Oh, wow.
Ah.
I see how it is, Lance. You couldn't call in. You're in your car driving. You can't call in.
This has been Lance
Talk. Lance Talk.
Lance Talk.
Where in the world Lance Talk, is Lance Talk. Hepler? Did anybody watch Carmen Sandiego back in the day?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was the show. Should rebrand that as Lance Hepler.
It's a millennial thing, so.
That was an old was millennial old. Thing, too. Yeah.
There was even a computer game back in the day.
There
before.
Was.
This is before.
Really grainy 2D video game. Back when video games were computer games.
Right. That was computer game before the internet. So you had to buy discs and install and then play the game.
Yep.
All right. Well, last week we did the whole show in reverse, which was kind of fun. And I think we might do that again in the future. But today, because Lance isn't here and he's not going to backpedal for 30 minutes, we're going to go ahead and do the backpedal right now.
Let's just get it
done and out of the way. So Adam Price, what's up, dude?
Man, I'm getting married in five days.
You got five days left.
Whenever Saturday is.
What are you going to do with those five
training
days?
Camp. No, that's actually, I as a joke put up wedding day training camp day one. And I actually got a text from somebody that was like, you're not seriously going to do a training camp your way. I was like, that's a joke. Come on.
Are you taking your bike with you on your honeymoon?
No. The amount of times I've gotten that question too is funny. Yeah. No, I'm not.
I actually feel like.
But we're going to rent bikes while we're there.
That's
just
not
to
a
like,
weird question
go and ride.
For the two of you guys.
No. It's kind of. Trust me, we thought about it. Just it is such a pain in the butt traveling with the bikes.
Yep.
And we do not want to add more stress. So we're going to go there. We're planning on swimming and running for fun. And then we're going to rent bikes one day and do a fun route. We're definitely not going and riding the Kona course because that's that is boring. There's way more beautiful riding around Kona than the Kona Ironman course is notoriously not a fun course.
You could drive it or something.
Yeah.
If you want to.
What I joked with Cassie is I want to drive out to the energy lab and then just do a 5K run there. Yeah, I just want to experience what that actually feels like out there, which I'm sure it's like the surface of the moon. It's I'm sure terrible, but just historically, it'd be fun to run there.
If you do a 5-miler, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
I'll go out for the KOM out there. I'll just sprint around that area and see if I can grab that KOM.
Oh, that would be very interesting.
I think I kind of want to go after that KOM just for fun.
Like the running one. Because no one's time trial
a 5-mile out there. Yeah. No one Nobody's running fast out there. No. You're dying at the end of the marathon out there.
What's the fastest? Okay, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
During the history of the race.
Yep.
That's probably one of the slowest parts because that's mile 20 or something, I think.
Definitely.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
What do you think the fastest times, pace-wise? 6-minute pace?
6:10, I bet.
Ooh.
I bet 6:10 is as fast as anybody's ever gone out there. Only because even when Lange ran under 2:40, because what Lange ran, 2:38 or something?
Is that the record?
Yes. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Lange's marathon.
6-minute pace, right?
Yeah. Basically 6-minute pace. And I bet he was not cooking through that area.
You could go out there and go 5:30s.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
All right.
You don't think anybody's ever done that before?
that's a good point.
It depends on how popular that little Strava segment is. If there's even a Strava segment out there.
Yeah, they might not even put. We'll see.
Yeah. This is running Strava. It's not like,
Running Strava people care way less about than biking Strava.
I have very few Strava
CRs.
Course records. Yeah. Yep. And
do you have a running one?
One went down this morning. I got an uh-oh email.
No.
And I looked at it, and I'm like, someone was just biking through whatever. And I looked at it, and it was one of my runners from that had graduated maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Sam
Take that,
Geiger,
Coach DeGrand.
It was not Sam Geiger.
No, did you? I got to see Sam Geiger race this weekend.
He went 14:30.
14:32, I believe.
That's good.
He was barely in front. I think he was right in front of Micah Goff. Shout out to Micah Goff. Big performance. 14:35 this last weekend.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Sam can. I don't think that's unbelievable for him. I think that's good.
He's going to keep on chopping it down, I'm sure. He's a sophomore at Gonzaga?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
He's good. He's a good athlete. I just don't know. I mean, I think 5K is going to be great for him as long as he keeps moving. And but
5K
anyway,
is such a hard distance to be fast at.
Different athlete. And, I don't even know what they probably ran, 6-minute pace or something. They're probably just outrunning.
Yeah.
And I'm got my KOMs. Stay on target.
Okay, back
up. Let's help.
Finishing up my backpedal here.
Did you do anything?
That was all forward pedal, by the way.
I'm pretty committed right now to this 24 to 26 hour training regimen per week. I am locked into that. So
you're going to take a break for your honeymoon.
Yes. I'm still training during that, but it's very casual training. It's open water swimming and running is basically going to be it. So then we're going into Salem after that. I will get to
Salem race.
Salem is July 10th. So all the training now is gearing up towards
these
builds.
Basically, like, this week, which is just normal, and then sort of, and then you'll have a week off, basically, like a down week. It will be a down week.
Yeah,
when you come back.
One hard week. I'm gonna go straight into like a hard 10 days of training and then like a 3-4 day taper into Salem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So yeah, that's basically it. Yeah, that's all. We just did our wedding 5K, 10K. Matt was there. It was a blast.
You ran well.
Fun. Yeah. Yeah. Did a workout at the wedding 5K, 10K, which is,
Did Cassie have fun?
Oh, yeah. Cassie had fun. Cassie actually ran a really fast 10K, too.
Did she?
Yeah. Yeah, she was running like, what was it, high, like 840s or something.
She's
like that.
She's getting to be an amazing athlete.
She is. Yeah, she's been slowly getting better and better on the run just from consistency.
And biking.
Consistency.
And she doesn't have to worry about running. No. I mean, swimming. She doesn't have to worry about swimming. She's got that.
Oh, yeah. Still a strong swimmer. Swims a lot of open water work, too, so she's a good open water swimmer. Yep.
Amazing.
Matt. Backpedal.
I've swam open water a couple times.
Nice.
I'm going to make a video. This is one of those videos that's going to take like 2 months to make. I'm going to make a video that's like comparing every watch that I have access to, open water swimming accuracy.
Oh, nice.
I think that'll be an interesting video.
That's a good one, because I'll be honest, I go into races.
Yep.
And I'm swimming much faster than I do in my open water training. And by what my watch is saying when I'm in the water. My watch's paces have to be off. It doesn't make sense.
I think there's a lot of inaccuracies. Okay, so whenever your watch is underwater and it's deep enough, it's losing GPS signal. Mm-hmm. And so it has to basically, I really want to talk to like some engineers and figure out how.
Should I put it in my cap?
You could, and it would work well.
It's just hard to pause it.
I don't want to do that though for a race.
No. God, no. I'm talking about with training, just to get an idea of what pace we're actually
trying to do that for training. The other thing is that you don't use one of those pool buoys, do you?
No. You can put it in there.
You can put it. Well, you want to situate it so it's sitting on top and it doesn't flip around and go underwater.
Oh yeah.
But that should give you a very accurate. And you can borrow a watch that has like more accurate GPS. I'm going to have all of these ranked basically, so I'll have at least a dozen watches ranked. But so I've been swimming a couple open water swims, and I'm starting the process of this, but it's going to take forever to swim 1,000 meters with a dozen watches. Just takes a long time.
So real quick though, are you one watch at a time, or are you strapping like 14 watches to you?
No,
that'd be funny. So that'd be very funny.
You can't. You can kind of do two at a time. You can do one on each wrist, and then you have to have your base layer, which is going to be a very accurate GPS watch that sits on top of the water with a buoy pulling behind it.
Uh-huh.
So I think I can get away with maybe like two watches per 1,000 meters. You know, and then just do that a lot.
I can go out there one day with you if I need to get,
because one of these days I'm doing like 5 or 6,000 open water.
Are you?
I can come out there and just do, because we know exactly what the fallen leaf flap loop is.
Here's what we would do. We could knock out a lot of watches if we did that.
Oh yeah.
So we'd do 1,000, come back into the shore.
Switch watches,
go back out, do another 1,000, switch. You could get a drink of water, you know, like go back out, do it again.
Yeah, I'll do this with you. Let's do it this summer.
I'll help you. Just let me know.
We have Jake on the paddleboard.
Honestly, a paddleboard, you could GoPro. I have all the things. And GoPro, drone. All the things we should do.
Mm-hmm. This would be fun.
It would be fun.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a really interesting video, because I think there's been people that have done similar things, but...
I haven't seen anything like that, though.
There's not a lot where it's really a true comparison.
Everything ranked. Yeah.
And then I'm trying to think if I want to... Like, how I want to rank them, because I could write some software that looks to see, like, this is accurate, how far off... This is accurate, and then I could really rank them by the numbers. Mm-hmm. I could write some software that would do that, like look at the discrepancy in GPS distance, or I could eyeball it. And I honestly think that eyeballing it would be in some ways better, because you know, you may be off a certain distance, but it is kind of consistent with the path that you're going.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, we'll think about it.
Cool.
We could do it. We'll have fun.
Yes.
So anyway, I've been open water swimming as my back pedal, and I've biked indoors. And I was biking outdoors a couple of times, mostly because I was testing that new bike computer from Garmin, the 1040 Solar edition, which is a really interesting bike computer.
That solar works really well indoors, doesn't it?
Well, that's why you got to go outdoors. I went outside and
I was
biking in the rain, and I was like, I got to bike with this thing. Because you only, okay, so What happens is manufacturer will send you something and you'll be like, yeah, you got 5 days before this video needs to go live. And you're like, it's raining for the next 5 days. Like, when am I going? And you have work and you have everything else to kind of figure all these things out. Jeez, so man. I went out in some pouring conditions and interesting.
Did you go on Friday? That was a bad rain day. I ran Friday and it was awful.
There was one day where I was just drenched.
Thursday.
Was it Thursday?
Yeah.
You can, I can. Yeah. So, and then the other thing is I can't post it to Strava because you're not allowed to post it to Strava.
Oh, because
it's a pre-release product.
Gotcha.
And so I always like hide all those things and then I need to remember to go back and make them public or whatever. But it's, you know, it was interesting because completely drenched, just destroyed the bike. The bike is so gross. And I was just like, you know, everything was just dirt right everywhere. Yep. And had the time of my life. Just so happy. Because you just, I mean, you know how it is when you can't bike and then you get to bike, you're like, oh, I'm so happy. Yeah. Even if the weather's bad. And it's not cold. It's not like you're cold and wet. Like, it's not like your feet are hurting. You know when it's like really cold and your feet hurt?
Yeah.
It's not that
like
cold.
This is low 60s rain.
This is just you're just wet.
It's a warm rain.
The only problem is like everything has the road grime on it. So like you reach around your back to grab something and then your hands are just like almost sand covered with dirt. And then you wipe your face and your face just gross.
Or in my case, you get in your car after that and you're like, my car's dirty forever now. They will never again be clean after one of those rides.
So I still need to like work on the bike and clean it up. Yeah. So swimming, I actually went for a 1 mile walk yesterday.
Hey. There you go.
Nice. So,
and in your neighborhood, that's basically a stair stepper.
I drove down to Heritage Trail. That's where I'm at.
Oh, nice. Smart.
I drive down to Heritage Trail.
Would,
and then I walk along that beautiful Heritage Trail.
Yeah.
It's like Lakeside Long Run.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a great spot. You know what's funny is my mom's here now for the next week leading into the wedding. So she did that's a missing part of my back belt. The only part that actually matters last week. She just did a 50K yesterday.
Oh, wow. I was going to ask how that went.
I'm like, nowhere. Yeah. She made it through it.
With her knee,
you know,
her knee hurt.
Yeah, I mean, she's got a bunch of things that are hurting her, but yeah, she made it through it, and you know, felt okay today. Saw her today. She's sore, but not crazy sore. So
that's amazing. She's an amazing person.
She is tough as nails. She for sure is. I think when you meet her, you realize like, oh yeah, she's like a very very nice person all the time. But when she's committed to doing something, she can get pretty darn gritty. Yeah,
don't
she
want her
can
to hurt herself committing.
Oh, that's something. What I always think about too.
Yeah. Do you know anybody else like that, Matt?
No. Never.
I am so soft compared to her though. I was. She's also historically
far from the tree. Is that what they
say? She broke multiple ribs and finished a race once. If I broke multiple ribs during a race, I'd be like, "Yep, that's about where we're finishing this thing." So there's and we're done. Yeah. No, but yeah, that's good. I think that you know it's with the rain right now too, and I know Matt, you've been getting this. It's almost funny that you're like getting back into outdoor cycling now. Matt's probably the only person that like truly appreciates the rain at this time.
Well, I think that's always how it is. Like when you can't do something, you just want it that much more.
Yeah.
I almost think about that with like my high school athletes where I'm like, oh, you're injured. You're going to love running because you can't do it right now. You have this block of time where you can't do it. And then you come back and you're like, oh yeah, don't ever complain.
Yeah. That's why some like little off seasons for those kids are great too.
Yep. That's
true. Get them wanting it again.
Right on.
Backpedal. Mm-hmm.
That it.
You got anything?
Yeah, we had a full slate last week. It was good. We did the Tuesday gravel ride, which was fantastic. And I did my row on Monday, like usual. That's my
go-to.
Yeah, be rowing tonight. The Tuesday gravel ride, those things are just so fun. I think that is my favorite ride of the week.
Really?
It's just so fun. And unless we're doing something cool or epic on the weekends. But there was that.
Yeah, Ed took you guys out on an awesome ride. Yeah,
yesterday.
Yesterday was yesterday?
I'll get to that in just a minute. And then on Wednesday, we did a shop ride. Those are fun.
Those are good.
Those are like more and more people are coming out every single week.
I bet.
It's like, I guess nobody has to work. But it's
Ryan's
just a
more important
fun, like we try and keep it somewhat Z2-ish and everybody's coming out. And it's kind of one of those things where we can have a bunch of different people come out and we just try and keep going at not too many downtimes.
I think you guys are going to be having some of the high schoolers jumping on those this summer too.
I believe
be awesome.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I've already had a few inquiries about that. So
are you guys mostly just kind of going out, going west, going flat stuff?
I've made like 3 or 4 routes.
Oh, okay.
And it's, you know, there's a couple that we've done that were going out west, like towards French Bends and, or down there on Old Evergreen Highway down the hell of the north, if you will. We've done laps around Lacamas Lake too. So that was fun. Speaking of laps around Lacamas Lake, the flogging ride this past week.
How'd that go? Was it wet?
The weather was awful. And we were looking at the forecast throughout the course of the day, and it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. But it was going to be warm. It was like low to mid-60s. And we're looking at the radar, and there was some pretty heavy, cells that were coming through that were going to dump a lot of rain. I'm like, you know what? Let's do this instead. Instead of going all the way up north like we normally do and come back around and do our little almost 30-mile lap, let's do laps around the lake. And if you want to bail out because it's too wet, you can jump out at any point in time. It's like 9.1 miles per lap and pretty easy bailout kind of thing. So we did laps around the lake instead. That ended up being a lot of fun. We had probably 9 or 10 people that showed up because the weather wasn't good. But it ended up being myself and Paul and a couple of the guys from POA. And we were in the A group. And then we put everybody else in the B group and let them have like a 7 or 8 minute head start. And we wanted to reel them in before we were done with our 3 laps. Nice. So that was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
My God, was it wet. It was drenched wet. You want to know a funny little factoid here?
Yeah.
We recently, in our household, we started using the old Tide Pod. I don't know. We never really used those before.
Yeah.
And I had washed my kit and that day, and I'd thrown it in there, and I just threw a Tide Pod, not thinking about anything. Washed it, and then I texted my daughter when she got home. I'm like, hey, can you throw my stuff in the dryer on air dry so that it doesn't, you know, get wrecked and all that?
It didn't make it to the dryer.
No, it did. It went into the dryer, and we air dry it, and it doesn't get hot, so you don't want to ruin the kit.
Yeah.
Came home, put the kit on, went out, and started riding, and it turns out that you need to run an extra rinse cycle if you're doing just a Tide Pod with your kit. You know why?
Oh, did you suds up during the ride?
Oh, my Lord. The chamois of our kit.
That's actually hilarious.
Absorbs all of the soap, and we're riding, and you're so wet. And there was somebody else, one of the other guys from POA was getting it as well. But there was suds flying off my butt during that the ride. And it
hilarious.
Was
hilarious.
I wish somebody got a video of that, because that'd be the greatest B-roll of any cycling thing. Yeah.
Oh, I've got B-roll of it.
That's awesome.
My 360 camera got some B-roll of it, because I was trying to get some video of the new Varia radar. I wanted to show that it was waterproof and how the picture looked in the video.
Make sure it's sudproof.
It's sudproof too.
How do we turn that into an awesome meme or whatever? Because this is how you get dialed famous.
How to clean your grundle while you ride.
Exactly.
How to keep your seat clean.
Yeah. Keep your seat clean.
So that was kind of the comedy bit of that. It's like literally suds flying off of my backside while we were doing that ride. And I was just laughing.
We use the powder stuff.
I normally do as well. There's a certain powder stuff that we use to wash our stuff, and we're out right now. So I just went ahead through a Tide Pod.
Not
thinking about anything. It's like, I've got a nice washer. It's going to do its thing. No, you got to do an extra rinse cycle.
Gotcha.
But anyway, and then we did the gravel ride on Sunday, which was fantastic. Put together an awesome little route. We went out and did it. Some trails, less traveled.
He knows that area better than probably anybody I know, and he's not from here, which is so awesome.
He's been here for a year and change, like a year and a half.
He has learned those gravel roads like as good as Dustin knows them. And that's like, you know, Dustin's probably was the most knowledgeable of that area. Yeah.
So we went out and did some really cool stuff, like trails that I'd never run out there before, and saw like there's a beautiful lake back there that's been there since like the 1960s.
With a little waterfall.
Yeah, they're going to be taking that out.
What?
Yeah, evidently they're taking out the waterfall and just the whole lake itself, because they're trying to let the salmon get back up in there to spawn.
Oh, gotcha. So, okay.
Evidently, they were supposed to start on that in May. It's still there, but just
hopefully it stays a little longer, because that's really cool.
That was beautiful. I had no idea what that was there. Yeah. I'm like, how can we get up?
I only know that because of that. Yeah.
So anyway, that was a really fun ride. So that was the thing, though, that did my shoulder in for the week. So my shoulders smoked today.
That's a lot of gravel riding. Yeah.
Anyway, that's my back pedal. It was a fun week. It was good. Yeah. Nice. Good. We can repeat that in the weather.
And
knock enough weather.
It is still raining. But, you know, we're flying in the face of the rain at this point. We're just at this, you know, like I was mad at the rain like 2 weeks ago, and now I'm just like, you know what? Screw it. Like, we are just going to continue to do all the things we want to do. Who cares? We're just, okay, the rain can continue.
That's why I went out and did the flogging ride in the rain. And I did the gravel ride yesterday, knowing that it was going to rain most of the time. It's a warm rain, at least.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
if it were in like the upper 40s and raining
like
that,
month ago, what we were dealing with was
No.
Totally different.
Another little fun fact.
Those days were terrible.
I have not ridden on the trainer since May 8th.
Wow.
Oh, dang. That's impressive.
June 13th.
Don't worry. Don't worry. I've got you covered.
Oh, yeah. I've got you way covered. I'm riding probably four times a week on the trainer right now. Yeah.
But
The weather for your wedding day 5K was fantastic.
Oh, it was great. And I actually, I know this is selfish, but I was love that it was a little bit humid, because I need to get some humidity training in. And that was great. It was like warm.
Yeah.
You're about to in Hawaii.
Yeah. Seriously.
You'll get you covered.
I've heard it's out there.
Hey, Champ Bailey's gone. Yep. I don't know. What's the
Champ Bailey.
I've got some tri news.
Lance takes off. Champ takes off.
What do we have? Escape from Alcatraz?
Des Moines and Eagle Man this last weekend.
I don't even know.
The first ITU race leads. It was actually a busy triathlon weekend.
Take it away.
It was.
Let's hear about it. What happened?
Champ Bailey here. Do I get to be the? Do I get
Champ
to play the thing?
Champ
Come on.
Champ Bailey triathlon.
I'm a top 10 cornerback from Denver.
Top five.
Good times.
Okay, so this last weekend we had the second race in the ITU calendar for you cycling fans out there. The ITU calendar is where the really fast triathletes race, which is the guys you get to see in the Olympics. So there are a few young guys coming through the field right now that are insanely fast. Alex Yee, Hayden Wild. The Norwegians are still very fast. Some French guys that are very fast, and some Spaniards. So it was very competitive. The women's field is crazy fast too. So these races are just fun to watch. And it was a sprint in Leeds. So very hilly course in the UK. Unfortunately, the hometown favorites, Johnny Brownlee and Alex Yee in the men's race, both crashed out.
Johnny separated his shoulder or something,
Something bad. I think broke his... I heard he broke his lecranon, so I think it's his elbow. Okay. But yeah, I mean, something bad. Martin Van Riel also like fell on the run and really hurt himself. So it was a technical course, definitely. And Vincent Lewis, who was in the lead of the bike with, I believe, Leo Bergeret, they were going to come off with about a 40-second lead or 30-second lead, which in a 5K is a big gap. And Lewis miscounted the laps and crashed into a barrier.
Oh, I saw that.
Controlled the bike somehow, got back on, still finished top 10, but definitely rattled him. Like, you could tell. This poor guy just has...
He got passed.
It's got bad
during
luck.
The crash. He, like, yes. was, like...
Leo passed him.
He was sliding. Basically, you could tell, like, he can ride the bike.
He can very much ride a bicycle,
He had all of his weight on the back wheel. And just
rode it into the fence and held onto it somehow. Yeah, he's one of those guys. I think if there's this new age of ITU athlete coming in that has good bike handling experience, they can bike. Vincent Lewis, if he took a year, could figure it out and be racing in the pro peloton. He's got it. But he got run down by Hayden Wild, who is running outside of his mind right now. He ran 14 low, like 14:10 on a very hilly course.
It's interesting with ITU guys. I feel like these people come out of the woodworks and just do weirdly fast stuff.
These are pro runners too. I mean, like, well, Alex Yee is one of the fastest runners in the UK, period. Like, end of sentence. He's one of the fastest. Hayden Wild might be the fastest runner in New Zealand. I mean, these guys are very good. Jake Birtwistle from Australia.
It's weird.
It is, because you're looking at these guys too and you're like, wow, they also bike 16 hours a week. You're like, where is this energy coming from? But very fast. In the women's field, on the American side, Taylor Spivey was in the breakaway that got away, ended up finishing, I'm going to get this wrong, I think she was fourth.
Okay.
She had a great day, coming off of a running injury too, so she's coming around. But the race was won by Cassandra Bougrand, who threw down. She got dropped on the bike from the lead group, and then bridged up on the run and ran the fastest women's split by a lot. Like, she had a 10-second penalty and still won the race. So she was flying on that course. Outside of that, over at Des Moines Ironman and the long-distance stuff, Matt Hansen proved he can ride a bicycle fast over 112 miles. He won the race. Andre Lopez had a great breakthrough, second place. And in the women's field, Sky Munch showed that she is the class of American distance for women right now.
Heather Jackson race or
no? Heather wasn't there.
Lindsey Corbin.
Lindsey Corbin was there. And finished, and you know, had a good day for her. Yeah, which is awesome
for Kona and all that.
This being her last year, I think she's retiring after this year.
She's gonna probably do Kona in the fall and then
and then be done after that.
She's done like 9 or 10 Konas or something crazy.
Yeah. Seriously. And then there was Eagleman, who was a little bit softer pro field, I'll say.
Yeah.
I really only know, I think Cody Beals won the men's field. I'm not even sure what happened in the women's field, but yeah, that was basically it. Outside of that, then the Criterium de Dauphiné, Jumbo Visma is really fast.
Very fast.
We will be talking about that more here coming up. So that is, yeah. I know Lance always gives updates on like gravel racing and stuff, but I'm gonna throw a punch at gravel racing right now. I just saw the funniest GCN video where they were like making fun of gravel's culture right now.
Yeah.
Gravel wants you to not take it seriously, but also wants to make money and to have you take it seriously. They're trying to like get into broadcasting, get into all these things. And like, But also at the same time,
yeah. But does cyclocross have a little bit of that too? That like we're gonna have beers on the sideline. Yeah, and
but cyclocross still has that Belgian bit to it. Still, yep. Where it's still like there's still like a gritty natural competitiveness to cyclocross. They're just like we're gonna also have fun simultaneously.
I think gravel. That's gravel
wants their cake and eat
about.
It too. Yeah, yeah. No, they want their cake and they want to eat it too. And I loved this GCN video where they were joking. They're like, gravel wants to be taken seriously, but if you come here as a pro and take it seriously, or you're a road cyclist, we don't want any part of you.
Yeah,
it's like, well, listen, gravel. If you're gonna have Euro pros who decide to come into gravel and they're dominating the sport, tough luck. They're better than you.
Pro race.
Yeah, they're making money doing it. And guess what? If the road cycling peloton decides to take on gravel racing, trust me, you're not going to hear about the Colin Stricklands of the world anymore. They're getting spit out the back. There's no way. If Peter Sagan decided one day to end my career, I'm going to train exclusively for gravel, guess what? He's winning basically all the races.
And it could be like team tactics. Like there could be some very interesting things.
It could
things
be awesome
could
to watch if gravel would just get over itself with trying to be this like, don't take it too seriously, but also we're going to try and be pro at the same time. It's like you don't get to be pro and not have the best in the world want to come in if money's coming into the sport.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
everybody should watch the GCN video. They word it way better where they're joking about how it's like rules of gravel racing as a professional. They're like, you need to win, but don't take it seriously. If you take it seriously, then
just
you get
imagine, though, if all of a sudden gravel became like a world tour kind of thing.
I'd watch it. That'd be great.
It'd be fantastic and fun to watch, but you could still have like a Fondo version of it where you're going to have
fast people
and you can have people that aren't going to take it seriously. They're just going to want to go out and ride.
Yeah,
so
just
it
separate
be
the
all
races.
The things.
Separate the races. And if you want to call yourself a pro gravel racer, guess what? You got to be racing the European Peloton now. Like that's just how it's going to be. If you don't want to take it seriously, go race the fun races, which are awesome. Those are great.
I don't think you can just take any guy off of a pro tour team and put him in a gravel race and expect that he's going to do well. I mean, you might have some people that have, well,
Wout, any, like, come on. If Wout jumped into a gravel race, give him 1 week to figure out the course, he's going to win the race.
Well, Wout is an exception because he comes from off-road stuff behind. Like, he's like a clear, like, if you took him or like Egan Bernal, let's say healthy, he's got a big engine.
He's a mountain bike guy.
Is he a mountain bike guy?
Oh, yeah.
Wrong example.
You'd be surprised how many of these road Peloton guys actually come from mountain biking when they were young or cyclocross. Yeah.
Any of
the Belgians, they ride cobbles. That's way harder.
The guys that are coming from that background, I'll say, you're right. They're going to dominate.
Pure roadies, I agree with you. But I would still say give them 1 year. Give them a year of riding some gravel and just get there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if they threw some more technical stuff in there.
These guys ride descents like it's, I mean.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between a descent on a gravel bike and a descent on a road bike.
But
I'd say
their feel for the bike is so good. Sam Long jumped into a road or jumped into a gravel race and was like moderately competitive until he had mechanicals. He was like with the lead group. Yeah. That guy rides a TT bike on a trainer.
That could be an interesting little, I don't know.
I just think an engine's an engine. So it's, you know, if you're in gravel racing and yes, it's technical bits, but it's not cyclocross. Like cyclocross is where I don't even care what your FTP is at some level. It's like you need to be able to really work a course.
Sure.
Gravel racing still at some point, if it's a 3% climb for 3 miles,
the grind.
The best are going to the front of that race.
Yeah. I mean, especially if we're talking about like Unbound, but I'm thinking about like the ride that we did yesterday. And like,
well, Belgian Waffle's a little different story or some race like that.
Some of them, those are different. Mm-hmm. But like the ride that we did yesterday, there's some stuff there that like you need to have some skills to be able to get through that efficiently.
Yeah.
And
but
fast.
Those guys in the pro peloton, even the road, they have the background and pedigree, definitely. Gotcha. I don't, you know, I mean, like roadies like me, no, the 0% chance I'm getting dropped on every descent. But
I think in due time, though, just given the popularity of it, it's going to come around.
You're going to start seeing guys like that.
Yeah, it's going
to. I think it's got a long way to go. That's my take.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Well, look at it right now. Really, the guys at the front right now are retired pros. I mean, really, I mean, Lawrence Tendam, Peter Stettman. I mean, these are all, you know, retired pro
that
guys.
That might be the way
Ian
it
Boswell.
Is. Ian Boswell, for sure. Yeah. That might be the way it is for a while.
Yeah.
And it's like you do your tours, you do your Europe, you're basically back of a team or whatever it is, and then you retire and you go do this.
Yeah.
And you're
it's the MLS of cycling.
You just look at the sheer volume of money that's pouring into that sport on an annual basis, not much is growing annually every single year. It's like
growing, but it's nothing compared to World Tour stuff.
Correct. Yeah. But here in the States, it's growing like huge. I mean, you and I were having an interesting conversation and before we started the podcast about like how much bikes have changed between 1950 and 1980.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a huge quantum leap during that point of time.
There's been a quantum leap since 1980 for sure.
And if you think about it, think of like, you know,
We're looking at a bike right now for our listeners. We're looking at a 1951 or something.
It's a 55 to 57 Bianchi.
Bianchi, and it if you put it next to a bike from late 70s or early 80s, you'll notice a couple differences, but I don't think that they're as massive as what you see today. Like, then you turn to the other side.
Oh, yeah, it's down tube shifting over here. Yeah.
Look at this. I mean, those are totally different bikes.
Yeah. So think about it, though. Greg LeMond, you've got Lance Armstrong. You've got, you know, just cycling in general in the United States blew up.
It's
bigger everywhere else in the world, but all of a sudden you've got these big American companies, Specialized, Trek, Giant, Cannondale. I mean, granted, some of their parent companies now might not be here in the United States. They pushed the envelope quite a bit.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of money that came into it. And that, you know, a lot of that stuff happened when road cycling became super popular here in the United States.
Now, same thing's happening in gravel.
Yeah,
100% agree with you on that, because those bike manufacturers can sell another bike to someone.
There's that, yes.
Which is huge.
There's a lot of people that want that.
Absolutely.
They want to get off the roads. They don't want to deal with cars anymore. Yeah. They're sick of it.
Absolutely. That's so awesome. I mean, it's great for our sport, for sure. The racing, the gravel racing, doesn't have the same feel as world tour.
Not yet. It's still in its infancy.
From a viewership point of view, I agree.
Well, in all honesty, like,
it's a harder sport.
Maybe it's because that's a very European culture thing, and it's hard. And gravel feels like it's kind of almost like, I mean, I know it's everywhere, but like, it feels kind of US centric.
It does right now. Well, I mean, look at the guys doing these races. They're traveling from Europe for the races, which means, I mean, there are people from Europe traveling for road racing here, but that's, I mean, usually if you're road racing, you're staying in Europe. Yeah.
Here's a question for you too. How much more are cyclists tolerated in Europe?
I don't know.
It depends on the country.
But on the whole, much more accepted and much treated with much more like
respect.
That's
what I've heard. Yeah.
Here,
not the case. Yeah.
We're hated. Motorists hate cyclists on the whole, and they want to get us
off
the road.
Just watch gas prices keep on going up, and all of a sudden, you're going to be grabbing that bicycle and get it on the road, and they're like, why is everybody so mean? You're like, all right, well.
Good point.
Gas is $7.50. You know, diesel's real rough in that truck that just rolled coal on you. I don't think anybody's rolling coal anymore.
So I don't know. Just the fact that motorists are the way that they are towards cyclists here, and the fact that people are driving so distracted and so many incidents are happening, a lot of people just want to get off the road. They don't want to do that anymore. So they're pushing people to go that direction, and it's going to grow more and more. You've got bike manufacturers now that are offering up multiple different kinds of gravel bikes. You've got your traditional gravel bike. You've got your aero gravel bike. You've got your more relaxed touring gravel bike. You've got bikes with suspension, without suspension, like all of the things. It's happening at a very quick clip in terms of like how long gravel bikes have been around.
It's all trying to figure itself out and get settled. Like, how much suspension do we need here?
I still think the e-bike will be wildly more popular than the gravel bike, though, in 10 years from now when we look back on this.
Probably.
I just think your typical American probably gets on gravel for a second, like, wow, this is hard. Okay, I'm going to go on the back roads with my e-bike.
I'm fine with that.
Which is great. No, I agree. Yeah. I think it's, as long as somebody's on a bicycle, that's all that matters.
Maybe if gas prices just keep rolling, keep on doubling.
Is there a ceiling? Coming from the guy who knows nothing about this, I know nothing.
Like,
I mean,
then we can get people. Honestly, if it was $10 a gallon, would we get people biking?
I mean, I would start biking at $10 a gallon. Definitely. I'm a commuter. You know, I have to car commute. I would definitely start riding my bike to and from work.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's
crazy.
That'd be $250 bucks to fill up my van. I mean, that's no thanks.
Whatever
Matt's
it takes.
Sitting pretty
more
with a Tesla over here.
I know.
Tesla a-hole over here.
I think a lot of electric cars would sell, for sure.
I would be buying one, that's for sure.
Yep.
Good times.
All right.
We tangented just a little.
We always do.
Was that off a champ? Okay, going into the topic today. Go.
All right, our topic for today, brought to you by Mr. Evan Price. This was his idea.
This was arguing before the podcast came up with it.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. It's going to be this question of like age versus youth or experience versus young talent.
Mm-hmm.
Which one wins out and why?
Yeah.
And I mean, what was your driving reason for bringing that up?
Well, because we were talking about YouTube titles where there's not always a correct answer, but it's just meant to like get you to think and get angry about something. Yeah. And this one I love.
Am I too old for triathlon?
Yeah. Are old people slow?
Yeah, there you go.
Are young people too dumb to win races? It's just anything like aggressive like
there
that. But no, I think it's cool because I've noticed a shift, and anybody who pays attention to cycling, I think, has noticed this shift too. There was a time period, especially in Lance's time, where really there was this old adage that to be a GC rider, you needed to almost kind of...
You got to be 30 years old.
Yeah, 30. You had to have gone through multiple GCs, you know, multiple tours. You had to be hardened, and like the team had to get behind you after years of you climbing up the ladder. And that is shifting now because if you look at the top 10 GC in a lot of races these days, there's a lot of 20. Like there's a lot of twos. There's a lot of twos before the ages these days. A lot.
In the last 5 years, Egan Bernal, and then you've got Pogacar twice.
Pogacar,
three people right there. They were under the age of 22, if I'm not mistaken. I think Egan, when he won, was the youngest.
I think Pogacar was.
Then came along and beat Egan the youngest age. So you've got two guys that are like barely in their 20s.
And then even looking at guys coming up, I mean, Vingegaard is climbing up there. Yep. You got
how old is he?
Whew, that's a great question. I'm going to guess 25. I think Vingegaard's like 25.
Is it Vingegaard or it looks like Vingegaard, but I think it's pronounced Vingego.
Is it? Okay.
I think so. But anyway, not that that really matters, but I just need to get that right so we don't sound like a bunch of jackals.
Vingegaard.
Too late.
But
he is 25 years old. Wow, I guessed around that one.
Wow.
Oh, look at me knowing my things.
How old is Roglic now?
He's a really cool story, too. That's a good question on Roglic. So Vingego. Was like a fisherman, like a dock worker.
Oh, seriously. Yeah, that's right.
Like, I mean, just gritty background, like that old cycling adage where it's like the guy that like couldn't afford a bicycle and basically like gets into the. I love those stories. That's okay. Let's see, Roglic. Second, I'm gonna guess Roglic is probably like 32, 33.
I don't think he's that old.
32.
Is he 32?
Look at that. I'm on a roll. Ask anybody else. Let's see if I can guess. Britney Spears. How old is Britney Spears?
No one knows.
She's 40, isn't she?
Probably. I think so.
I don't know why I know that. I think she had her 40th. Did she? She is. Yeah, I think she had her 40th birthday.
She just got married recently. Congrats, Brittany. I know you're listening right now. So
yeah, she's a big podcast.
She's a big
Patreon
fan,
too, right? Yeah.
Thanks for your support, Brittany.
She is 40. Oh my God, we're on a roll. Good job, everybody. We're shutting down the pod.
Useless facts.
Today's podcast is guessing ages. So it's interesting to see teams throwing support behind these younger guys. And I do think it's important to realize the training from a youth perspective is so much more structured now than it ever was in the past. So yes, these guys are young. You know, you look at them like 22, 23, 24. Some of them have been training like professionals since they were 14, 15 years old. So we're talking, they're like 10 years into their aerobic development. Now, maybe that wasn't always the case before, which in my opinion is probably better. I don't think any 14-year-old should be training, 20 hours a week or anything like that. But they're coming in as well-developed aerobic athletes. So I think it's important to look at age is sometimes just a number in endurance sports. You need to look at what is their actual aerobic history, how much, volume have they done in their life already? And then I think you can look at, hey, is this guy actually prepared for like GC contention? Egan Bernal has been a huge volume rider his entire life. Mm-hmm. So it's like Carapaz is another good example of guys that just grew up riding a ton when they were kids. Like Egan Bernal was not even, I saw an interview, he was talking about how much he used to mountain bike as a kid. He had no idea how many hours he was doing a week. No lie, he was probably doing 20, 30 hours, probably just riding around just for the sake of riding his mountain bike. Hmm. So you're talking about somebody who, yes, he's in his early 20s when he's becoming dominant, but he has been training at a high level since he was 10.
But here's a question. You got these guys that are coming in and they're winning big at a very young age, and they're doing a lot of stuff, and there's tons of volume and tons of things that are starting to pile up on them. Is that a powder keg just waiting to like implode or explode, and everything's just going to go sideways on them, and they're going to be burned out by the time they're 28?
Only at that level because of the outside pressures. So I have a pretty firm belief on that. Actually, if you are a really good young aerobic athlete, that building your base, as long as you're still enjoying it, is very beneficial for injury prevention long-term. The problems I think you see are when you see guys that, let's say they get into the sport 18, 19, 20, 21. I'm talking about triathlon too when I see this. And then they get the idea that they want to be really competitive. And they start piling on a ton of volume in short periods of time without that base from those younger years.
Yeah,
that's where you run into issues. So it's actually, I think if you look at a volume distribution over time, I think a more healthy plateauing of, like 2-3 years of this volume, 2-3 years of this volume, 2-3 years of this volume, is way healthier. I know Matt, coming from a history of running, I think you would, if you got the kid who's 18, 19, 20, who was running in high school 20, 30 miles a week, gets into a collegiate setting and all of a sudden is trying to run 60, 70, that's, and I'm just saying this because I see this all the time clinically, that's a powder keg for injury.
Yep.
I think if you're the kid that naturally played a lot and probably doesn't even know his volume, but was running big volume when they were young, And not crazy. I mean, they were just enjoying it and loving right. it. It's not like they had the coach who's like, hey, you know.
Got to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where you get the mental unhealthy yes. burnout from that. But if you're the kid who, I mean, I'll be honest, I was just talking with my mom about this morning. I didn't do structured running when I was young, but she knew I was not allowed TV time or playing video games Monday to Friday. So yeah. what did I do? I skateboarded, ran around, and rode my bike. That yeah. was all I did as a kid. So I was building volume at a young age without realizing it. And nowadays it's, I think there definitely are still kids that do that, but we track it a lot more now.
Yeah.
So we might look at Bernal and be like, oh, you know, was he doing training when he was younger? Did he just come out of nowhere? It's like, I bet he didn't come out of nowhere. He's probably right. been, you know, he's riding probably. His bike uphill since he was 10. Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah. There's probably not a lot of like TV time.
Yeah. Well, look at the best Ethiopian and Kenyan. Yeah. Like, yeah. look at the best Ethiopian and Kenyan runners. Yeah. They've been doing high volume since they were really young, like yeah. very young.
You got to get somewhere.
Yeah.
You're going to get somewhere. You're going to go run.
Yeah. They just loved it. So it was never a job to them until they were getting paid by Nike for it. Yeah.
At what point in time do you take experience over youth with talent?
Whew. I think when you're talking in a tour, it really comes down to like pacing over that. So if you're looking at, I think a good example too is when the Yates were, or not the Yates, my bad, the Schleck brothers were young. Mm-hmm. Massive amounts of talent between those two, especially Andy. Andy was wildly talented. This is, we're going back to the Schleck versus Contador era. I do think Schleck made a lot of early mistakes in his GC career purely by being not experienced enough to know, hey, if I blow a match on stage 8, I'm going to be in trouble later.
Yeah.
And that's where you'll see the experience, I think, Trump is, you know, you'll see a Wiggins, for example, race when he won the tour, really right. smart. He raced very, very smart that entire tour. But
here's another thing, too. I don't think experience matters. I don't think it...
You don't think so?
Not at all. Because you know what? You've got somebody in your ear yeah. the entire time that knows true. All of the science
it probably
behind
meant more
you
like the
better
80s
than you
and
do.
90s, yeah.
Yes.
yeah.
There's, it's kind of taken the need for experience out of the equation, and I think that yeah. has a big reason why. I mean, the last three tour winners have been 20, yeah. 21, 19.
With great director sportifs behind yes. them, if you really look at who was. Yeah.
Yes, and then they've got teammates, maybe some experience around them to help, like, yeah, yes, and this is why.
Yeah. They have more access to looking at, you know, I mean, like data. a lot of these young kids are probably, you know, like I'm sure Pogacar looked at a lot of information, tried to learn as much as he could. Yeah. And he has all that access now. He can know all these things without having to go and experience them all the time. Yeah. So
would you think then that technology has really just kind of made having experience moot at this juncture or this level of athletes?
To some extent, I do think there's still an experience of actually knowing what these late stages feel like in the tour.
Yeah.
Which is why I think there's only the flashes in the pan of young talent where it's like there's 5 or 6 guys at these younger ages instead of 20 guys that are doing it. You know, I do think to some extent when you look at GC contention still, there's still a lot of old guys that are still up there.
And now,
like definitely, you know, older experienced guys that were all in that top 10 consistently.
Now, when we're talking about triathlon, though, I think that's a different thing.
This is a great argument, triathlon. Yeah. Because nobody's in your ear.
Yeah. you are responsible for you. Yep. You know, I mean, you have people that you're responsible to, like sponsors and whatnot.
Yeah.
You don't have somebody
riding
around in a car behind you telling you exactly what to do the entire time. Like how many watts to hold, and how long to go, and when to break. And
but they will race to computers. And if they have a coach, they can get that.
Some of them, and this is what I think we see with the Norwegians.
Yes.
We see them racing. I mean, can we just say they're racing like robots?
Yeah,
and it's working.
I think they're great personality. People mistake, oh, they're racing like robots. Are they robots? These guys are fun people outside, but in that race, yes, they are robots. They will race that way.
That kind of makes road cycling boring though too.
It does.
There's a lot of robot-like behavior that's happening out there.
The Skytrain was very robotic. Yeah.
Well, it's still interesting, right? Like if you're racing like a robot and you. That sometimes will mean that you're going to, this is more triathlon where it's like, you're going to come from behind.
Yeah.
You're going to
finish
Christian
stronger. Does make it exciting that way. Yeah.
You're going to finish stronger than you started in some
Lionel raced like a robot for his first time in his life in St. George. And guess what? That was the most exciting finish I think I've ever seen because he got himself in that last 5K where he actually got to turn off the numbers and had to just chase somebody. Yeah. So, yeah.
Sprinting in the finish line kind of situations. Yeah. Yeah. Which is different in cycling, right? Because it's just group dynamics of cycling. And so triathlon is different.
And there's also, I think, in those moments, I'd still love to know what's going through Christian's brain as he's racing because I do think, yes, we're talking about they have all this experience given to them at young ages. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's all plugged into them. Like, this is the watts your body can handle. You can do this and that. But a lot of these guys are yet to experience. Yes, you can, in theory, do those watts. But we always, we think that this like aerobic, so exercise science research is notoriously all over the place. And very low power studies.
Yeah.
Very low. Horrible. I mean, we're talking, anybody, if you are ever talking to a coach or anybody and they're trying to like tell you like, this is what you need to do by the research, make sure you tell them that that's going to be different in a year. So like, do not take it for Bible.
In the research you're quoting is crap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was an 8-person study from, you know, eight white guys who are all 22 go to Stanford, as we joke, which is, you know, no female research for a long time. So it's like, we're talking bad research. So all that they know is what they've researched of themselves. So like Christian's numbers are because he's trained like a psycho for the last like 10 years of his life.
He's trained like a robot for the past 10 years and he knows his numbers.
To a T.
And great.
I still think if you took those numbers away from Christian, he's experienced that sensation so much, I guararantee he gets a similar result.
Well, he's probably, I mean, you know, when you're on the track and you get used to this, you can do a 400.
I can tell you in a second.
I can tell you within a second of what that 400 was.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's without the watch.
That's without a watch. Yep, I used to play that game with my coach all the time. Like, that was a 72. That was a 72.
Which to me as a coach is way more important than me telling you. I love when I have some of my type A people I coach and I will plug in there and be like, we're doing 12 by 400 by feel. This better feel like your 5K. Yeah. And they're like, well, what pace is that? I was like, I don't care. Make it feel like a 5K. You need to learn what a 5K feels like. That's not a time. That's a feeling. Now, granted, some people I will tell them, like, you're going to be in between this range because you don't know what that feeling is yet. But once you start to develop that feel, I mean, look at the way the Kenyans do their Congo line where they run in 400s with 20, 30 guys. You look at that. Very few of those guys are wearing watches.
Yeah.
They're in the line where they know their body can sustain. You think of even a Pogacar who's grown up with numbers. I guarantee if he's on a climb and you had the moment to ask him, like, Pogacar, what do you think you're pushing right now? I bet he could tell you the wattage pretty close without looking.
Yeah, for sure.
True.
Yeah. He could probably tell you the watts per kilo he's pushing without even looking. He probably could. Yeah. Also, he just dropped a Strava ride. He very rarely drops Strava rides. And he did it. This guy seems like a nice, unassuming guy. He just dropped two training rides on his Strava.
Just to mess with people.
Just to mess. One of the 20-minute efforts was like 6.7 watts per kilo up a climb at like 9,000 feet elevation. He dropped that on purpose.
Yep.
This is like Lance Armstrong killer instinct, where like Lance used to talk about how he used, I forget the name of the climb Lance used to do his training on, but Ferrari used to say that if Lance hit on this whatever minute climb, if he hit 7 watts per kilo, he's like, it's done. As long as you don't flat, you win.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that got into Lance's head that as soon as he hit that number, regardless of whether Ferrari was right, Lance was going to win the Tour because in his head, he's like, I'm the best. You know, Pogacar dropping that workout was him saying, none of you are staying with me right now. Like, it's over.
I think there's some, I think this is a mental strategy thing to mess with your opponents.
Yeah.
Right. And so I've seen this it seems a little catty. It seems a little ridiculous.
It's definitely catty, but it's,
at the same time,
that level, it's ridiculous to see. It's amazing.
And I've seen this in running as well, where it's like they only drop a couple of workouts and it's to scare other people.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Like, you're like 20-mile tempo. That was like 5:30. You just drop that. You're just like tempo.
It would be.
You're like warm up and cool down included.
Yeah. No, I mean, you would just see it from like the top. You would only see it like it's like this person's going for a gold medal and they want to intimidate the rest of the field. And so why else would you release these workouts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you do it through like back channels back in the day because they didn't have the internet, right? Yeah. They didn't have Strava. It was just like you release these and that you knew that information was going to get
you had to
someone.
Mail it to everybody back then.
Basically.
You had to.
you release it to some coach or whatever that talked to another coach.
You took a Kodak of your odometer with a clock right next to it.
Driving next to you. Yep.
And then sent them the tape.
Video.
And then,
cassette tape.
But I think with experience versus that is a guy like Pogacar, because I don't want to just look at age for this. Pogacar behaves like an experienced GC rider.
He is experienced.
He is. Yeah. So I think that when you look at Vingegaard, Vingegaard to me is youth. Vingegaard's purely
Even though those two guys are like the same age.
Yeah, I know. But like
crazy.
Them racing together, you can tell Pogacar's the alpha, older, experienced one in that situation when you saw them going head to head. But Vingegaard showed that youth and talent that he's like, oh man, when it's coming down to it, I would not want to be next to that kid.
Right.
I don't care how experienced I am. I'm experienced enough to know he's faster than me, unfortunately.
Man, I am looking forward to our tour predictions.
Next week, I think. Yeah, we kind of have to. Like, it's coming up in, what, less than 3 weeks? Or like,
we should push our tour predictions to the very end because someone's going to be like, oh, I'm out.
We have to do not next Monday, the Monday right after that. Because I'm not here next Monday.
Can we do that?
We got to do it the Monday right after.
I don't even... When does the tour start?
Is it the first week of July?
July 1st.
Yeah, it should work. I know that 4th of July is 3 weeks away.
That'll be like 6 days before, which is perfect. So yeah, that way nobody
Because there'll be people that
crashes.
It's it's the week before all these people drop out.
This is why we can't do our Kona predictions.
We do
too close.
We mess up our stuff every time.
We screw it up every single time.
Right on. So is experience just not really that big of a deal anymore? I mean, to know what to expect...
Yeah.
But from like a race tactic standpoint, I mean, it really doesn't matter anymore.
It's losing value. It's
Alejandro Valverde.
Love this guy.
41 years old at least. Yeah. I don't know.
Just what a champ. God, this guy's great. Maybe.
42. He's old. He's old.
He's so old. That's
didn't he
great.
Just win some like Innsbruck or something? He won something like some sort of
he's
classic.
Been at the front. Yeah, he won something, but then
place
of yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but he's also been at the front of a bunch of races lately. He's always at the front. The guy just figures out a way to ride his bike
such
fast.
Such a clean athlete.
So clean, never tested positive once.
So what are you calling experienced? What age? Yeah. What is that 30?
No, 40s.
40?
I'm going to say late. So I'm going to say experience racing. I think you need 10 years of experience for me to say you're experienced. Now, that can be... George Hincapie was racing very competitively when he was like 14. Mm-hmm. So for him, once he was into his mid-20s and had been in the European peloton by that point, 25, 26, he's experienced in my book.
Yeah. So it's a matter of time served, not necessarily physical age.
Roglic, let's throw the curveball here. Roglic has only been a real cyclist for 6 years now, I think.
That's actually a really good point.
I don't see Roglic as experienced. And here's the funny thing. Yes, he's in his 30s, but how many... potential tours has he already lost? He's lost two Vueltas by kind of a last week mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, stuff that Pogacar's not making those mistakes. And that's probably,
they're similar in experience.
Yeah, I think Pogacar maybe has a couple more years of top cycling experience.
Might
be
right.
He's only 23.
Yeah, but I bet he's been racing hard since he was young. I saw a big podcast with Peter Attia, who's a medical cardiologist guy who does cycling stuff.
I follow his stuff.
I love his stuff. His stuff's great.
Yeah.
But he brought up Pogacar's coach.
He's a little bit on the crazy side.
Oh, he's on the clickbaity crazy side. But I like...
Well, I don't know about clickbait,
he brings on really good experts and guests who are very good in their field and really...
Yeah.
So the guy he brought on who's Pogacar's coach... You know what's really funny about
this? I haven't heard this one.
Oh, I need to send you this one.
Is it a podcast or is it a...
Yeah, it's called Deep Dive on Zone 2 Training. And it's like a two-hour... They go into like Pogacar's training and stuff.
Wow.
This guy's a physiologist.
Right.
So what's funny to me is nobody seems to be throwing up red flags that who's Pogacar's coach? Not an old pro cyclist.
Doctor.
He's a doctor. Yeah.
Interesting.
When Lance was saying, you see, Pogacar's not even smart enough to bring on a coach who he's like, oh, no, this guy's my coach. Like, Chris Carmichael's my coach, not Ferrari. Whenever Lance was, I'm pretty sure Chris Carmichael was only on Lance's staff to be like, hey, man, you can send me workouts, but let's be honest, I'm not doing them. But whatever Ferrari gives me is what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's his beard, huh?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know. What about with just amateur sports?
Amateur sports, I think experience is way more important.
I think
in a local Cat 3 Peloton, it's much more important to be experienced, definitely.
I don't disagree with you one bit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that will show up to a race and have a ton of talent, and the experience is going to beat them like 9 times out of 10.
Yeah. But it goes to the same thing. I'll never look at age. I look at years racing experience too. Because I'll still look at like a late 30s guy who comes in who's like pretty talented, but...
He's been
really
on Zwift.
Raced a bike and only been on Zwift for 2 years. Yeah. And now he's like, he's got a big engine, but God, I would not trust that guy making a smart decision in the Peloton.
Yeah.
As opposed to like a kid who's maybe 18, 19, but has been road racing since he was like 13, 14.
Yeah.
That kid probably is making smarter decisions in the group by that point.
Gotcha.
I still put 10 years as the
magic number.
Magic number of like 10
years
your
is
experience.
A lot. 10 years is a lot.
Yeah. It takes a long time. I mean, I've been racing since I was 18. So now that I'm going on 31, I'm like, I wouldn't have called myself an experienced racer when I was 20. I thought I was experienced when I was 25, 26, 27, but I would not have said I was making smart decisions as a triathlete at that point.
I don't know.
Do you think it's uber important to have somebody on a team like UAE for Todd Ave to have like that resource, that elder guy, that elder statesman that's been around the block a few times?
That's where experience is important in the Peloton right now. I think it's when you're looking at the team structure. I think you're an experienced director sportif, really experienced medical staff.
It's almost like you want like that team captain person that's like, you know,
can harbor the talent. Yep. You gotta like shepherd the talent into the right category. Yeah.
Just tone things down a little bit. Like you got 3 weeks here, guys.
Yeah.
Who do you respect as somebody that comes from that experienced, like a, we'll just say like an old like Jens Voigt or
that's what I was gonna say.
I would say, oh God, what is it? What's the team called now? It was the old Orica Green Edge team. They had Matt Walsh, I think, whatever the guy's name was.
He was the coach, right?
Yeah. He was an old tour pro.
Director sportif.
Yeah. He's somebody who I think is pretty well respected. I still very much, I know he's black. Johan Bruneel, to me, whenever I listen to their podcast, that guy's cycling knowledge, just being able to spot and harbor talent, is pretty insane. Yeah. People can say whatever they want about Johan Bruneel. He was the best director sportif of his generation.
Yeah. Interesting. What else?
Contador is Contador. Got his own team now.
He has his own team now.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How old is Contador? Is
he's 40? In his 40s. Is he 40? I'm pretty sure he's in his 40s. Yeah.
He's got to be close.
A guy who's been racing since he was really young. Yeah. That guy's got like 30 years.
How about this? How about somebody out there who is experienced that is like demanding respect because they're experienced, but really is
doesn't deserve any at all?
Yeah.
Greg LeMond. No, I'm
just Valverde. You think?
Oh, that's a bad comic.
He's still doing well.
He's doing great. He's doing great, but I think his background is sketch.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like Valverde was definitely in a very, very dirty Peloton era. But
what about Chris Froome? He's kind of, I mean, he left the
Chris Froome's a good example because Chris Froome to me grew through a team that was built for. He was given a lot of things that other really talented cyclists at that time were not given opportunities wise. Sky was a multi-million dollar team during that era. And there's a reason they were driving the pace at the Peloton. They were the best, period.
Yeah.
He also was surrounded by some of the best track cyclists Great Britain's ever produced. So he was around a really good structure. Would I trust Chris Froome's opinion on certain things if I was a young up-and-coming cyclist? I agree with you, Jake. I would look at, I would trust Jens Voigt. Yeah. A Fabian Cancellara, I'd even trust a Valverde. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Chris Froome would be the one I'd go to and be like, "Hey, Chris, how'd you do it?" Because I know he did it. It was Brailsford.
Do you think he would have won the tours that he won if he was on a different team, a lesser team?
Nope, I don't think he would at all.
Yeah,
no.
I don't know. He was talented. He was a great athlete. He did well. He ride the numbers. I mean,
yeah,
they call him a robot because he rode the numbers. I think he would have done I think he would have done fine.
He's still a massively talented engine, no matter what. But I just think
how is he doing this year? Has anyone
left the Dauphiné this past week because he got sick? He wasn't really effective there.
He's going to ride the tour, though.
That's the plan. He's on the Israel startup team still, and he's supposedly going
early. Early pick for my podium there.
You got it. You have to pick him. You have to.
Does he even finish in the top 10?
No. God, no. I don't even think he finishes the tour. He's not gonna finish. He won't finish the tour.
I think
how many stages before
you? Oh, that's a good. I need to look at the stages first before I answer that. I'll save that answer.
That's a great question.
That's like, a great side bet. Somebody mark that down.
Oh yeah, side bet is
what's the stage Chris Froome abandons the tour?
It's not even side bet. That's the only thing that matters.
Who cares? We all know the podiums are going to be wrong. So
we know that the podium. Richie Porte, I think, would be another one I would want on my team.
Yes,
from experience, great guy.
Oh yeah.
I don't think he's racing the tour this year. If I'm not mistaken,
I thought he was retiring after this. I thought he was retiring after last year. I was surprised he made it to this year, actually.
I think he's finishing up after the Vuelta or the Giro.
Valverde are both gone. God, talk about an era ending.
Yeah. Wow.
Those two have been at the top of everything for a long time.
Richie Porte's 37.
Yep, he's hanging it up
39
this year.
For Contador. We were close on Contador.
Wonder what he is doing for the tour.
Someone knows. Richie'll be at one stage. He'll like be in a breakaway group and probably win a stage at something.
I feel like they would bring him as a captain type person.
Yeah. Talk about a guy who's committed to like high volume type training his entire life. Yeah. Richie Porte's been riding since he was very, very young. And
it's like every ride's 120.
That
miles.
Guy, as soon as he hit his 20s, was like riding 30 hours a week religiously. I mean, he's the best example of just like boring consistency mm-hmm. gets you places. You do not need to be flashy. You go out, you ride your bike a lot, do a ton. He has like epic elevation rides. This guy just goes and just finds mountains and just rides up them all day.
Yeah.
He's very much that old like Eddie Merckx, just like ride upgrades. I love that. Yeah.
Yep. Well, I don't know if I've got much else to ask you about that unless you got something else you want to touch on or cover.
I think too, there is the problem with youth is there is a higher risk of, you had mentioned burnout before. I do, or Matt had mentioned burnout. I think there's a higher risk of two things in really, really talented young endurance athletes, mm-hmm. mental burnout and physical injury. And I think both those actually go more hand in hand than people like to admit. I think overuse injuries are very related to cortisol dump and misbalance. And I think that does lead to a mental burnout simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I think if your body's starting to break down, you are running into other issues outside of just the physical. And in younger athletes, I do think they have not built up the years of resiliency that you get from experience. So if you've been an endurance athlete for 10 to 15 to 20 years, your system has been exposing itself to this stimulus over and over again, and our bodies constantly adapt. Mm. So that's 15 years of robust endurance training you have underneath you. Now, there's going to be a ceiling at some point, but let's be honest, that ceiling keeps on getting bumped up.
It
keeps on moving up. Yeah. I mean, there was a time period where it was like, man, if you're 40, you're not competing with guys in their early 20s. And I see Dr. Handel out there kicking 20-year-olds butts every single race he's ever been in. And let alone at the professional level, you can continue. I mean, I hate the guy, but Jan Frodeno is continuing to crush guys younger. I mean, it's Daniela Reif made us all shut up with.
Yeah, she did.
Oh, she made me shut up. I was like, oh, yeah, Daniela Reif's done. Couldn't be any more wrong. So I do think there's a robustness that you develop with years of experience that is more valuable than maybe just the, hey, you know, you got the strategy down. It's like, no, your body can take a large load of training consistently over a time period and perform. While with young guys and gals, you don't really know how their bodies are going to respond yet. You don't know how that physiology is going to, you know, you might get the Pogacar that seems to be made of steel. Sure. Yeah. But for every Pogacar, there is 30 other very talented young cyclists that did not pan out that way because they either got injured or mentally burnt out because they couldn't take it. So, I think that's where experience is more important, I think.
I got to love endurance sports. I just big shout out to endurance sports. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. Seriously.
Think about this, though, because, I mean, you'll have people competing at a pretty high level. And, like, certain sports, or just about all sports, you're kind of starting to be done between 35
football
and
running back?
40. Yeah. That's like 28.
28, but, you're done. Yeah.
But if you think about it, like, most high peak level sports, you're done at about that station.
Gymnastics, you're done real
but
early.
How many people are hanging up the football cleats or the baseball cleats or the soccer cleats and going on, you know, once they've finished their career and they're going to go continue to play that? No, they just stop with the sport altogether.
Yep.
And the next thing you know, you
how
seem
many
like
of them pick up a bike. Reggie Miller.
Barry Bonds.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys. Yeah.
But, you know, if you think
Bo
about
Jackson.
Exactly. If you think about it though, like these people, when they're done playing the sport, they're kind of done. And then like you see them like 5 years later, like, oh,
right.
Yeah. Looking a little rough there, pal.
Like, oh, you didn't change your eating habits, did you?
But endurance sports, people generally stick to those for life.
Yeah. And they can stay competitive in it for long times.
Into the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. They're doing that and they're healthy. They're fit. Their disposition is good. And they're
changing how we look at it medically. Yeah. I love that the medical field is, I mean, the medical field, we're always being proven wrong. Like, that's just history. We just continue. We continually say things, then we're wrong like 10 years later. But I love that even the medical field is having this battle right now of like, what does aging really mean? And it's being brought about by these very competitive aerobic athletes. That's where a lot of this research is coming from, is guys into their 50s, guys and gals into their 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're having to redefine, you know, we had the old adage that I still hate to hear, this whole, oh, you wear out as you get older. I'm like, no, I hate the message that sends.
Yeah.
Because me as your medical professional, I can't predict the future.
Yeah.
And if you're a patient, you hear your doc try to predict your future, question it immediately because you're like, you don't know me, you're not in my body, and guess what? Yeah. I'm gonna prove you wrong in 10 years. And this is, I love to see that continuing. And I really do think, I know the millennial generation gets a lot of crap, but I'll tell you what, I know a lot of guys around my age, and I'll even say, Matt hates to admit it, but I think you're actually like the last year of millennials, aren't you?
No, I'm pretty old.
No, I think I actually know the years on this. You're either the first year of Gen X.
Like my wife is, this is where like the line is like, we're 2 years difference and she falls
into
the millennial.
Okay, gotcha. So we're talking around that line. I cannot wait to see people in their 30s right now when we're talking 56, because we've grown up organized sports and competitive and aerobic, and we're now into those 30s, and I really think we're going to – I don't think that competitive gene just disappears. We're going to – I mean, look at like a Josh Mondo of the world.
Yeah.
I think Josh Mondo's not going to be fast when he's 70.
Yeah.
That guy is still going to be pushing the bill at that age.
Yeah.
I fully plan on still doing that unless I do something dumb, which is highly more likely. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how we change the look at experience and aging for an aerobic athlete. I think it's pretty firm for like, I don't think we're going to see a 40-year-old running back. I don't think that's happening.
No, I mean,
there's only so many car crashes you can get into, but the body regenerates and builds through aerobic sport. It's not like boxing or football where there is a destructive, a true destructive part of that sport. We're talking brain injuries and stuff like that. Yeah. But
just all sports though, in general. I mean, when people like are done playing baseball, they don't generally continue to play baseball or train to be at a high level.
Or they're going to a beer softball league.
Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't happen, but it just seems like this sport, even the people that don't go the route of being a high level, like a professional, whatever, they continue to do this year in and year out. And they take different experiences, or they race, but they race in a different age group category that keeps them competitive. I mean, just like our teammate, Ian Gibson. I mean,
amazing.
61 years old.
That guy's still jumping in with the POA train and like Monday nights, every night.
Yes.
That guy is there.
He's out there racing in the Cat 1-2-3s, and he can hold his own.
He's got a bigger sprint than I do by a lot. It's not even close. Ian Gibson's going to smoke me in a sprint.
And you wouldn't know it by looking at him on a bike with a helmet on and sunglasses. You would think that he's 20 or 30 years younger than he actually is. And he can still throw down. He's still got big watts and still can go ride for hours and hours and hours.
And that's what I love, is he would describe himself as a sprinter, which I love that a guy in his 60s is not like, I'm just going to do Grand Fondas and I just go slow and long. No, it's like, no, Ian's like, I'm going to sprint. I'm a sprinter.
But it's just, you compare him to your average American that's 61 years old.
I just had this soapbox earlier today. Yeah.
It's a night and day difference. And this is because of he made a decision later in life to get into cycling.
Yep.
I mean, he'd always had an affinity for cycling, but he made it a decision later in life to fully commit. Got a coach, started training, got on the team, started getting out there, mixing it up, climbed up the categories. And here he is, you know, like what, 7 or 8 or 10 years later.
Yeah.
Like
faster than he's ever been.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I remember him showing me a picture not too long ago of him when he first got into road racing, when it was a picture of him out at PR, if I'm not mistaken. And you look at him like, I am really glad that you made that decision and that you are in the shape that you are now. Because he's like in better shape now than he was a decade ago, which is fantastic.
And think of him at 61. I was like I said, I was on a soapbox about this earlier today because I was talking with a few people about it. So he's 61. He's part of a generation that was told, hey, as you hit 40, like your athletic days are done, bud. Like you're done at this point. You're wearing out. Your joints are wearing out. You're probably going to have arthritis by the time you're 40. And to see guys like Ian that, even with all that poor misinformation out there, kind of rose above that. And they're like, no, I think that's wrong. I'm pretty sure I'm going to do this thing still.
I've dealt with so many people that are like, my doctor told me that if I run,
I'll break my knees apart.
I won't have knees. And then they're just like, well, you know.
Apparently, being a physical therapist, I have to stay on top of research to an obsessive point. Yeah. But apparently, as soon as you put on a white coat, you get to say whatever you want and never get checked on it. It's great. I went to the wrong medical schooling, but I'll tell you what, that was a little bit more expensive. So,
So you're not going to wear out, but you're going to slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you can still do it, and you can still be competitive. And the
best way to not wear out is to keep on using it. Like Ian's saying, I bet he's using his knees a lot. He's doing pretty good. He's doing it. His knees can take more force than my 30-year-old knees.
I know his knees have given him trouble in the past, but I'm so glad to see him like doing
still crushing
exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Wasn't it his knees that were bothering him a couple years back?
He had that crash last year too. So that was
He separated. He had the same injury as you. Yeah. With your shoulder.
Oh. Yeah. He had AC joint separation.
He bounced back pretty quickly though.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did.
Better than me.
Hey, if you're stubborn enough. That's all awesome.
That's what it takes.
Gotta love Ian.
Yeah.
Good job, buddy.
Unless you're riding a track. Then
don't ride the track.
Don't ride that track. You can be stubborn as you want, but get another bike.
I'm looking at this list of past tour winners. There's a odd, they've got all these asterisks between 1999 and 2005. I don't know what that's about, but fast forwarding.
There's somebody in there.
I really am looking forward to us talking about the tour.
Oh, I am too.
This is going to be fantastic. Who's going to win?
The crazy thing is really if you look at winners too, there's like eras of winners. You're like, God, there was a lot of like consecutive winners. It was like, God, I mean,
this is
1999 to 2005. I cannot, it's incredible somebody stays at the top for that long. Like that's so hard to stay at the top. But I think it's happening right now. I think Pogacar wins this year.
I know.
I think he does.
I think we're all crazy if we don't.
He's very dangerously fit. Yes, Roglic is great. Yes, Vingegaard's great.
I hope that we don't all say the same thing.
I just think he's going to win.
Pogacar, very boring
he's
podcast.
So fit.
Well, maybe we just all make a gentleman's agreement that he's going to win. So who comes in second
and third? Second and third. Second and third will be great races.
Yeah.
Really great races. Yeah.
Well,
also,
I mean, Roglic or Vingegaard.
I just saw Bernal do an out of the saddle sprint up a mountain recently in an Instagram video. I'm sure it was marketing directly to me because my phone's listening to me. But he looked like he's ready to climb up
you're
a
picking,
mountain.
You're picking him on the podium,
I'm not going to pick Bernal.
Please just do it.
But I'm like, you know who's going to dethrone Pogacar? The guy who broke 18 bones in his body before this. Geez.
Do you think
I'll be so pumped if he is on the
if he's at the tour,
line.
That's amazing.
He won't
that's
be, right?
I'm going to keep on saying yes.
When do they announce the teams? Because that's
real soon.
Because that you owe us all like a round of beers, I think, as soon as they announce that he's not going to be on the tour.
If he's going to be on the tour, I expect
I you said
gifts
that he was
from each of you, oh, yeah. like an actual said, totally, no, like
big.
Like present. Like I want a present wrapped. It can be something that's like $2, but I want it wrapped. Okay.
It's going to be big. It'll be amazing.
Do you think he'll be as big of a name as Eddie Merckx or Bernard Arnault?
Pogacar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Think so.
Pogacar will like be it. More of a God. What is he going to
bigger
go
name
down
than Chris Froome?
No, because I do think Pogacar is going to have some one-day results. So I think he's going to be more comparable to like a Miguel Indurain. I think because Miguel, you know, Miggy was very fit for a long time, was very competitive in multiple race scenarios. He was a great time trialist. I do think Pogacar, as he gets older, is going to develop into a really, really good time trialist. Mm-hmm. When he lays down a time trial,
it's amazing.
He's maybe faster than Wout. I mean, I hate betting against Wout anymore because I feel like anything that Wout commits to, he's probably going to be really good at. I still don't think he can win a GC. Only
right now.
Only because he's just, unfortunately, the way that GCs work out now is Wiggins was like as big as you could be and win a tour. Mm-hmm. He was like the cap, I think, of how large you can be these days.
Was he the age extreme too at
he
32
was,
years
yeah.
old.
Yeah, he was, I think. and Wiggins came from a very interesting background where he had probably the most well-developed hour engine that we're going to see in that generation.
Gotcha.
Wout's hour engine is amazing, but I'm not sure if he was that pure, amazing time trials Wiggins was.
So how old did you say Roglic was again? 32?
32, yeah. Does Roglic win one before he retires?
Yeah, that's a good question. And do you think that
he doesn't win a tour? I don't think.
You don't think
Don't you always put your money on Roglic? Isn't that one of the ones you always? It's like we always joke about.
No, I always want to put my money on a French guy.
French guy.
I tried Pinot, tried Bardet. None of them work.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just based on this conversation that we just had. I mean, he hasn't been racing for that decade, but that the age component.
Yeah.
He's getting up. He's a little long in the tooth, but 32 in endurance sports is still,
he's still young these days. And he's only, like we were talking about, in my opinion, Roglic is young as a Roglic is comparable to Pogacar in his development.
But when you look at the overall age of all of these like super fast competitive guys, I mean, I don't think that you can say like an MVP is going to be
Roglic's window is going to be smaller just because once he hits 40, it's like, I mean, could he still win? Sure. I'm not going to say nobody in their 40s is going to win because as soon as I say that, somebody in their 40s is going to win. But
do you think anybody Pogacar's in their
40s got like the next 20 years where he could
do
be
you
fast?
Do you think anybody in their 40s could win the Tour de France?
Yeah, I'll say yes because as soon as I say no, like I said, somebody will do it and it could be a Pogacar. It could. I mean,
in 17 years, he's still winning tours.
And I'm just saying
that's
that because I'm looking at triathlon right now, and some of these guys, as they're into their mid 30s now, are like hitting their best ever performances. And I'm like, I'm not going to say that in 4 or 5 years they're not. Lionel Sanders could still be super fast in 4 or 5 years.
I know. I keep writing that guy off.
He gets better and better each year. Jan continues to prove me wrong every single time he jumps on a start line when he finally can. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting up there.
And so many questions, so many things I want to talk about, but I think we need to put a pin in this.
Yeah, yeah, we do.
Save some content for.
We do need to save some content for the Monday after next.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Got to get Mr. Hepler back on here with us and
see
what he has to say.
Cool. Trip to nowhere.
Yeah. Come on back, Lance.
That could be his YouTube series for this, The Trip to Nowhere.
So age and experience, 100%, that counts for everything, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Correct. Good.
What would be the YouTube answer to the question? No, wait. It's supposed to be no or maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. What's the answer? Maybe.
Right on. All right. We'll call that a wrap. That was fun.
Yep.
Let's do one last thing. Matt LeGrand.
Okay. Last podcast we talked, my question was, you know, what's too expensive for a bike computer? Evan Price said $1 million.
I think I don't remember what it was, like
800.
It was $800. Yeah. Now we're thinking, like, okay, maybe that makes sense. Are we talking about future? Because Evan's going to hold on to it for like 10 years. And
yes,
and
that's exactly why.
He was thinking into the future, which is smart because bike computers could just keep going up in price.
And they will. Because that's just how things work.
Also, but have inflation.
Right now, how much is too much? And like, would you pay $800 for
me? No, me right now, like $400 would be the absolute most I'd pay for a bike computer.
And that was my response.
And I would not pay $400, but that would be the absolute most I would pay for a bike
computer. Cool at $400, you'd be like, all right,
yeah.
So Garmin announced the Garmin 1040 Solar with a price tag of $750.
Pricey.
And it's nice.
$700. Hey man, I'm getting ballpark on the $800. I thought that was gonna take like 5 years.
$750.
Give it one more year.
I bet you people are buying them.
They're sold out here at the lab.
And didn't you order like a lot?
A dozen.
Wow. This is how fast the world's changing right now. 7 days ago, I said that $800 would be way too much. And I think Lance out here was like, nah, there's like, no, they're not even close to that right now. $700, that's $50 away. That is close.
The question was,
what would we pay most?
Right.
That can change slower.
And I think it's still largely $400 is the price point for high-end cycling computers, in my opinion, currently.
Yeah.
So seeing a $750 price point is a lot.
It is.
I would like to pay $120 for any computer or watch, but
that'd be nice.
I think that you can get a perfectly serviceable computer for $300.
Oh yeah,
100% across the board for your 530. Let's hope that the 540 comes out soon, or the Wahoo Bolt. Fantastic little computers. Both of them work wonderful.
Yep.
Do I need to pay more than double that for a solar bike computer? I mean, those little guys are lasting what, 10, 12, 15 hours or something like that.
Yeah, but if you are into, here's my
there's a very counter argument specific use case.
Yes, and I think that there are we talk about how gravel is exploding and things like that. The other thing is that exploding is bike packing.
Yeah,
and that is a great concept. Like solar, you know, you go out on a sunny weekend.
Yep.
For the entire weekend.
Yep.
And this computer, you don't have to charge. Put it in the sun, pretty and cool. It's gonna.
You know what you could do to that 1040 solar to make me buy it and pay $750 for it. Put the Garmin inReach Mini in there.
Yeah, that would be or
if I had satellite communication where I can send a text message and I don't have to have that little mini, I would pay the $750 gladly.
Yep, I agree.
Otherwise, I just don't see the value. Even if I was a multi-day bike packer, I can just go get like a cheap little inexpensive battery pack that I can stop and while I'm eating lunch, plug it in, and it's going to charge up.
Which you're probably going to have anyway on a bike packing trip.
Yes.
So I agree with you. I just think that there are bike packers that are like, yep, that's going to make sense. It's going to be the best bike computer for bike packers.
Yeah. I was blown away though at how popular those were and how quickly they disappeared. Like we don't have any more, and not for nothing, we're not going to see them again until August. I tried to place another order for them. They're like, oh yeah, those aren't going to deliver until the middle of August. I'm like, well,
if
you need one this summer, sorry.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of getting the sentiment that that's what's happening for everywhere, a lot of people everywhere. That was a very well-received and popular product.
Yeah.
And even the standard 1040s were super popular. And
that one made a lot more sense to me because the price point on the
$600.
Same computer exactly, except for without solar, $600. Yeah.
$150.
So still expensive.
I would still like to pay $120.
Yeah. Still very expensive.
I just understand that my needs from a computer are much less than your average bear. So
yeah, and that's kind of the way people ask me all the time, like, what would you do? And I'm like, I would get the Garmin, you know, 530.
Get the most affordable,
Something simple.
Yeah.
I don't need that much. I like to have power.
Yeah.
Stuff that can actually communicate with all the stuff that's going on the bike radars, all the things. Like it needs to communicate with those. And do decent
and not
GPS.
Drain the battery. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it just doesn't need to do all that much. No. Not going on overnight bike trips yet.
How's your video doing on that?
Crushing.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I did 6,000 or something.
I watched that. It was a great video. Yeah.
It just cracked me up because I love watching all your lifestyle pieces and those ones never crush.
No. I bet your video.
Why are you two people so boring?
I bet your video actually did pretty well.
It did surprisingly well for a lifestyle.
It's probably
definitely.
Got like 1,000 or a couple thousand.
I think I actually checked. It was like 2.5. I think not too long ago. Yeah,
which usually when.
But that's also because
like
there's that tagline of "Day in the Life" with it, and that became really popular on YouTube for a bit. So people probably.
I'm trying to I'm trying to soak up those views. Oh, anything. Day in the life of pro triathlon.
Ask a question. Is Matt LeGrand quitting triathlon?
Should I quit? Should I quit? Whatever.
Yeah.
Life.
Big life Sports. Change update.
Yes. I'm quitting YouTube.
Yeah.
That's the one. That's the one that gets the clicks.
Quitting YouTube tonight, and then I'll be back tomorrow. for another video next week.
Cool. Anything else, Matt?
Yeah, go watch that video. And then also watch Evan's video. Yeah. I liked that video.
Well, usually on your one last thing, you tell us about a video that you have come down the pipeline.
Okay, yeah. So probably by the time this podcast goes live, I'll have a video about two polar watches comparing them. I know all of us are mostly doing Garmin stuff.
Garmin.
But there's a very reasonably priced $200 polar watch, does triathlon stuff.
Nice.
They also have the pro version, which is $300. And so I compared those two. It's called the Polar Pacer and the Polar Pacer Pro. Mm-hmm. And so I compare those two watches and should be live tomorrow or Wednesday, something like
Sweet.
That. Yep. Cool. Whenever I get to it.
Nice.
Evan Price, one last thing
getting
before
married
you get married.
Saturday. That's basically basically it.
Any big life updates? No, not really.
Not really.
Oh yeah, I am getting married.
Getting married.
Oh yeah.
That's but right. Yeah, that's about
it's big.
Yeah. Racing PIR tonight. Me and Cassie did have a debate on where like she really wanted to bike race, like do either Red R or Independence this last weekend. Yeah. And we did decide, we're like, okay, if we do two bike races in the 3-day period before the wedding, what are the odds of one of us crash? And there was, so we decided on PIR is the only bike race that we're actually going to do this week.
Is Josh going to go
Usually
out with you?
Usually she would. No, he won't be going out tonight.
He won last week, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we talked
about yeah. Oh, yeah. Did we not talk about Josh? So Josh goes and races Sunday triathlon. This is what I hope people realize is like, if you see Josh race, he's probably not fresh and he's still going to win that bike race if he wants to. That guy went off, I think, on like three separate breakaways.
Yeah.
And then the last lap literally just like rode off the front and nobody brought him in. It was, I mean,
he posted a video and it shows him like on the inside crossing the finish line and it shows a whole train on the outside, like coming in, like maybe like a second behind him. Like he goes by and all of a sudden he's like a bunch of other guys and he won.
Exactly.
So
he just freaking crushed the race.
Made his own line, no train, solo off the front.
Nothing for the entire last
train
lap
that was trying to chase him down and didn't do it and he gets the win.
He's got, like, I know that we're racing, like, 4-5s right now, and we might jump. Who knows if we're going to jump. But the problem with jumping into 1-2-3s is it's, like, for us, we want it. It's very much a training session for us. We get to get on the front a lot. We get to choose our own lines. We get to attack a lot and do a lot of VO2 work.
Yeah.
And if you're in the 1-2-3 race, I got to, like, respond to stuff. And this is going to be funny, but I honestly think the 1-2-3 race is more dangerous than the 4-5s right now.
How so?
The 4-5s I keep pretty strung out. Which makes it a little
bit
safer.
Well, when you guys are in there, it does string it out.
Yeah, I string it out as much as possible. The 1-2-3s gets real surgy.
Yeah.
They're not, I'm sure I'm probably going to get yelled at by some 1-2-3 guy on here, but like they're really not moving that much faster than us right now. Their power profiles are like pretty strong. Like there are definitely strong guys in there, but they're clearly surging, recoiling, and they've had more crashes than we have this year.
I can't speak to the Masters, but I think they generally rolled mile to mile and a half to sometimes 2 miles an hour on the average speed.
When it's the open, those guys are going to be cooking because there are some real fast, like Cat 1-2, 20-somethings.
That's going to start pretty soon.
That's
so,
coming up next
but
week.
But that's going to give you another race option because they're going to have a 3-4 category. Yeah, and that's actually a fun field.
Tuesday night. I might be able to make that Tuesday.
Yeah, that 3-4 field is fun.
Yeah. Because if I have a not late patient, I can usually make that. Yeah, we'll see.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
We will see, though. That would be fun. I love racing threes fields. The P12 fields I have no business being in because you got to have top end to race P12.
It depends. If you get the right breakaway, so you just have to make something work for you. So
I'm under no delusions I can break away from a P12 field. That's
not
there,
solo,
so
but you know.
I would need to get with a
flyer
group of 4 or 5.
A couple other guys. And
Yeah. Those guys are strong.
Cool. Yep. I really don't have one last thing other than this video that I told everybody that was going to come out by last week. It still hasn't come out.
Oh, no. Busted.
I suck. But it is being edited, and it's probably halfway done. So working on that.
It'll be good.
The other one last thing is I'm looking forward to going to Evan's wedding.
Woo!
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, everybody's going to be there at this table. Lance gallivanting, so.
Lance is going to be gone, huh?
Yeah. You're going to FaceTime him then, yeah.
So everybody's been like, when are you guys going to get married? Then you finally tell them you're getting married and everybody's going to show up. Are you ready for the next question?
Yeah.
When are you having kids?
Oh, God, trust me. Yeah, I know. we are. There is no timeline on that for any foreseeable future at the moment. So
I don't really care. I just want you to be prepared because those questions.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Starting in a week from today.
They've already started. I'm sure it's going to exponentially increase over the next 7 days. So this is why we're going to Hawaii immediately after. So
the reason for the honeymoon.
I know. Yeah. That's awesome. Seriously.
All right. Well, I think that's about it. We will be back next week for another podcast, and maybe you're probably not going to want to call in from Kona because you're going to.
I could call in for a 5-minuter.
That would be awesome.
I'll give an update for five.
You could sit in a hammock like Lance does when he's over there in January.
That would be funny.
So.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. We'll be
we
back.
We'll definitely be back that next week though with our Tour de France picks.
Tour de France picks.
I'll be thinking about them all week. That'll be the only thing I'm thinking about. Sweet. Tour de France picks.
All right. We'll be back next week with another Dial podcast. Until then, bye for now.
I am a very competitive person, and I certainly am always motivated by trying to be the best type of triathlete that I can be and be as fast as I can be, as competitive as I can be.
No! God, please, no! No!